Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and today we're talking about technology. So are you a digital immigrant or a digital native? Which group do you think you belong into? So a digital immigrant, then there's subcategories. You can be an avoider, a reluctant adopter, or an enthusiastic adopter. And I'll tell you right now that all of us older people are digital immigrants. In other words, we didn't grow up with the language. But it really is difficult when someone is a digital immigrant and they're an avoider. Because nowadays we do so much with email and texting. And if someone only does the phone, it's very hard to communicate with them. So I ask you to avoid being a digital immigrant avoider. Try to be an adopter or an enthusiastic adopter. And then a digital native, they can be young, but they could also be an avoider. I mean, there are children who do not like to have anything to do with digital devices, or minimalist, or an enthusiastic participant. So how do you think technology is stealing a normal childhood from your children? For example, when your children come home from school, are they outside? Are they on the electronic devices? What are your children doing? And are you making sure that technology is not stealing what we consider a normal childhood experience? Now, mind you, normal has changed, unfortunately, but the way the brain works, we know that children need decompression time, they need outdoors time, they need fresh air, they need sunlight, and all of those are very hard to come by when they naturally gravitate to, oh, I want to be on the iPad, or I want to be on your computer. In fact, that's one of the things that I have to be careful with, because my grandchildren will come and say, hi, Grandma, where's your phone? And, you know, I want to spoil them, so I want to give them my phone, but it's not necessarily a good thing. Always have an alternative plan. So my alternative plan is, well, let's do technology for a half hour, but I want to go down to the creek, and we can go to the big creek or we can go to the little creek, and I want to make cookies, and inevitably, if they have those options, they'd rather do those than technology. So I think I have a good plan. Also, what do you do with your teens? You know, younger children you can control, but teens, what do you do with your teens who spend a lot of time texting and they're just on their devices all the time and they have easy access to them? What do you do with that? And then what are some of the positive effects of technology? Think of how technology has helped you in your life. So it's not all bad. You have the ability to communicate quickly with people. You have the ability to organize information and process it in a way that is easily accessible. You get a lot more done, and you can keep track of a lot more things. And then let's talk about the question, why do you believe there is a sense of urgency in turning this phenomenal digital world into helpful, non-destructive, and life-building tools? And I can see that from an educator's point of view and from manufacturing point of view. We don't want this digital world to ruin us. We want it to help us. So these are some of the questions we're going to be talking about in this show and upcoming shows. So let's start with, where does all the time go? Have you noticed that you, even though you have all these digital devices to help you, that you have less time? Have you said that question to yourself or to others? My smartphone is an extension of myself, and how could I survive without it? Unfortunately, I am in this category. So we'll call this order no mobile phone phobia. In other words, I can't live without my mobile phone. Nomophobia. Nomophobia. It is a digital disorder named for the fear of being separated from our cell phones. And without a doubt, our smartphones and other digital products have become very important in our lives. So we have to really step back and go, do I have nomophobia? Nomophobia. So if we can't live without our devices, then for the most part, we probably are addicted and do have nomophobia. I want to share a story with you. Last week, a man went to work without his smartphone. He was in a hurry and accidentally left it on the breakfast table. The received call, that's in parentheses, setting on his phone was on vibrate, and all day without his phone, he experienced phantom vibrations. He would reach for his phone, believing there was an incoming call, only to find that there was no phone there. He had heard about how amputees could feel phantom pain in missing limb, but he never realized it could happen to him with a phone in a pocket. So it's interesting that this phantom cell phone vibration disorder, and we'll call it PCVD for short. So that's another disorder. You have nomophobia, and now you have PCVD, which stands for phantom cell phone vibration disorder. And another piece of statistics here that I want to share with you is about, it's from the Barna family. Barna does a lot of statistical reporting, and it reveals that many of us are spending as much as 8 hours a day in the digital world. According to this report, the digital age is shaping the parent-child relationships in striking new ways. The following are some of the findings from the report that can help us as we reflect on and try to come to terms with our relationship with technology. So I'm just going to go through this list. You can think about it. And you can always Facebook me your comments. Education Currents has a Facebook page. Just like it and comment there. Or you can comment at Rose Gamblin. Okay, number one. Parents are just as dependent on technology as are their teens and tweens. Parents are using technology and media to nearly the same degree as their 11 to 17-year-olds. Younger parents and digital natives in their 30s and 40s are even more dependent on technology. Well, I believe that, and I'm not sure what you should do about it except just reflect and think, you know, make sure you don't forget the important things, the important relationships that you need to have face-to-face time with. Okay, number two. Most family members feel that technology has been a positive influence on their families, and they welcome technology and media with open arms rather than with caution. And I know we've had a lot of words of caution about brain change and even the increase in cancer with cellular devices held close to the head or ear. So just think about that. Number three, very few adults or youth take substantial breaks from technology. This confirms that Americans are increasingly becoming dependent, if not addicted, to technology. Only 10% of parents and 6% of teenagers say they try to take one day a week off from their digital usage. The question that arises is whether families are in control of their technology or being controlled by it. Well, that would be an interesting... I don't know of any family that would want to readily admit that their technology was controlling them. So I don't know how you would honestly rate that. But will have everyone on their own Scout's honor. Number four, families experience conflict about technology, but not in predictable ways. The research states that technology seems to amplify the relational patterns and problems that are already in place. Families that have healthy and frequent conversations find technology aiding the process, while families without such healthy interactions find that technology exacerbates the isolation of its members. Well, interesting. Let's continue. We're just reviewing a study from the Barna family on the ways that technology in the digital world are influencing families. Our younger people feel that there is a double standard with digital rules. Their parents are telling them to get off the computer or not to text at the dinner table, but they don't do it themselves. They are not modeling good digital boundaries. Well, yes, you know my feelings on that. No reading material, no digital devices at the dinner table. But so many times families don't eat at the dinner table. They get their food and gather around the television or a movie or something. So just do it in moderation. Okay, and the last one. Few families have experienced or expect to experience churches addressing technology. Most parents and children have not heard any kind of teaching in church, religious setting, or public forum like school about how families can best use media, entertainment, and technology, and are not getting any coaching or assistance when it comes to healthy integration of technology into their family life. And I know that part of what I have done is to make sure that I do talk to my students about it, that, you know, we have technology at school, but then we also talk about how much they have at home and what they can do at home using technology for homework. And some families are very strict, and I appreciate that and I applaud it. So we just make sure that their homework is catered to that. And I think every teacher should. There should be some kind of survey sent home along with the beginning papers of the year saying, you know, how much technology is your student allowed to have at home, and how long can they be on the internet, and is it a safe place for them, and can they do research, etc., etc. Okay, well, we have to take a break right here, but when we come back, we're going to talk about how is technology connecting or disconnecting us from the real world. We'll be right back.
You've got questions? God has answers, and they're all found in the Bible. Welcome to God's Treasure Chest. I'm Charles Mills. Let's see what's hiding in God's Word today.
Would God ever get married?
Marriage came into being so men and women wouldn't be lonely. The Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone," Genesis 2:18 NIV. Usually God doesn't get lonely because he's surrounded by millions of adoring angels and a universe full of beings that enjoy his friendship. But right now he is lonely for us because sin has separated us from him. That will soon change. "I will make a helper suitable for him," the Creator continued in the same verse. Wives and husbands were made to be partners together. God has partners. Jesus, his Son, the Holy Spirit, plus a million angels and a universe full of beings who enjoy his friendship. "Be fruitful and increase in number," God told Adam and Eve in chapter 1, verse 28. "Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground," NIV. Husbands and wives were supposed to have babies and care for the earth. But in heaven, God can speak people into existence and create worlds with simple commands. No need for marriage. Marriage is God's gift to us. It creates new homes where we, too, can be surrounded by people who love us. If you'd like to learn more about God and his amazing treasure chest, write for your free kids-only Bible course. The address is Treasure Chest, P.O. Box 530-55, Los Angeles, California, 90053. Discover the many answers waiting for you in God's treasure chest.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and we're talking about technology. Just in general, we're talking about every aspect of it and how it helps and hinders and what we can do better. And now I promise that we talk about, is it socially connecting us or disconnecting us? And this is interesting because on the surface, I feel like I'm much more connected to a lot more people. I will meet someone that I don't really remember anywhere except having seen them on Facebook. And I can say to them, hi, you're my Facebook friend. And I don't know much else about them, but I wouldn't even have that connection if I wasn't involved somewhat with social media. Anyway, it's neither pro nor con. You have to answer that for yourself. Are you more socially connected or more disconnected? So I'm going to read this little excerpt from a book called Disconnected by Dr. Nicole Radswill. I've heard that admitting you have a problem is the first step towards fixing a problem. This is my confession. I am a social media addict. I did some data collection the other day and I discovered just how bad my problem is. One, I was checking Twitter on an average of every 8 minutes while awake. Two, I was checking Twitter nearly every 48 minutes while asleep. Since I sleep for 8 hours a night, that translates into 10 Twitter checks while asleep and 120 checks a day while awake. I was checking my smartphone about once every 2.5 minutes while awake, not counting the times I wake up in the middle of the night, which would put me over 400. So Dr. Radswill isn't alone in this questioning of her social media use. If you just Google technology addiction, you'll see more than 66 million results. So what do you do? It appears that we are a society that's kind of become more disconnected and impersonal, and in the other ways, almost faceless, except for the face that we want to portray. Facebook and smartphones have filled that need for connection, and they have given us the face that we want people to see. So that gives you pause for thought. Are you addicted to your social media, which is one aspect of technology? Technology allows for us to have that ability. Now, another researcher has come up with the idea that the digital world is causing us to lose our depth of thinking, contemplation, feelings, emotions, the ability to reflect in those rich analogies from what we've experienced to learning. There's also an emerging idea that this shallow depth in our cognitive processing is causing a new range of problems. Our digital gadgets are so smart that we don't have to be smart anymore. In short, they're making us dumb. Well, I don't know about that. What do you think? For example, they're saying because we don't have to know how to spell words. Well, it was a blessing to me because I could not learn how to spell. We don't have to do math computation, and they even help us with research projects. We can get an answer we need in the click of a mouse. Now, I often would laughingly say that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to complete my PhD without Google. Well, you do a lot of research when you're doing a PhD, and I also researched the different types of statistical analysis that I was doing. I didn't have a professor readily available, so I could Google canonical correlations and find a very nice tutorial on how to conduct a canonical correlation and with the appropriate software as well. So, yes and no. So if we're living in the shallows, how do we take time for deep thinking? And I love the idea of taking one day off from digital devices because there's nothing like sitting with friends and family in a creek, in a lawn chair, and having deep discussions about the Bible, God. Those are wonderful times, and they do help you refocus. I want to quote one more book. It's by William Powers in his book, Hamlet's Blackberry. And just the title kind of is funny to me because I can't imagine Hamlet having a blackberry. But anyway, it could have been titled Hamlet's iPhone or Hamlet's Android. But Hamlet's Blackberry, at the time probably when he wrote the book, the blackberry was the thing in vogue. So this is not a small matter. It's a struggle that's taking place in the center of our lives. It's a struggle for the center of our lives, for control of how we think and feel. When you're scrambling all the time, that's what your inner life becomes, scrambled. Why are we doing this to ourselves? Do we really want a world in which everyone is staring at screens all the time, keeping one another busy? Is there a better way? And yes, I happen to believe that there is a better way, and hopefully as we continue on our series on technology, we'll find a better way. And then I want to conclude with just a wake-up call to parents. And you can just answer these questions to yourself or, you know, reflect on these statements and just see what you are doing in your family. How is your family's relationship with technology doing? Consuming media is far outstripped, you know, reading storybooks or playing dress up in the average American child's life. It has even been said, and I have experienced it, that media is used as another parent or as a babysitter or caregiver. With kids spending an average of 8 hours a day in the digital world and only 2 1/4 hour a day with their parents, there's bound to be some challenge to the parenting task. My grandchild asked the other day, who I'm always trying to pull back into real life, and he wanted to show me some tricks that he had learned online, of course. So I said, go ahead, show me. And he spent the next hour showing me 56 card tricks. Well, I mean, it could have been less, but it felt like that. So it was a real wake-up call for me. It was one of those things that helped me remember that their world is there in technology, and I need to help them manage it. It's not going to go away, and at the same time, I don't want it to be the end-all. I want them to have a meaningful relationship with me, their parents, and Jesus Christ. So thank you for talking to us and spending this time as we talk about technology in the digital world. And I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.